This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Gershom Gorenberg, is an Israeli journalist who writes about the intersection of politics and religion. He's the author of the book The End of Days, Fundamentalism and the Struggle for the Temple Mount. One chapter of the book is devoted to his analysis of the Left Behind series of apocalyptic Christian novels, co-authored by Tim LaHaye, who we just heard from. Gorenberg is also an associate of the Center for Millennial Studies at Boston University and has written for the Jerusalem Report and the New Republic. I asked him how he interprets the popularity of the Left Behind series.
The first thing it says is that there's a tremendous interest in apocalypse, in the end of days, as portrayed by fundamentalist Christianity. It's not restricted to a few nuts, somebody standing on the street corner with a sign saying, "The end is nigh." It's a part of American culture shared by millions of people. The second thing it says is that the books themselves are spreading that belief, spreading that interest, and along with it, spreading a whole set of religious and political ideas. Religious ideas that are essentially fundamentalist, largely intolerant, and political ideas which belong to the right fringe of American politics.
What are some of your concerns about the ideas in the series?
Well, the series presents a fantasy version of today's world. In the books, the final 7 years of history are taking place, but if you read carefully, what's really going on is this is our world without the dissonance felt by fundamentalist Christians. This is a world in which miracles take place, in which all the bad things from a fundamentalist perspective are openly being done by the Antichrist. And so it provides a certain roadmap of a view of today's world. It promotes the idea that there is a conspiracy of financiers behind world affairs. It promotes the idea that that dark satanic conspiracy has among its aims global disarmament. So the moment you run into anything that's working for peace or international cooperation, you're supposed to identify it as associated with the Antichrist, with Satan. There is a portrayal of Catholicism as being a partner to the Antichrist, as being a religion which is essentially the handmaiden of the devil, or in the apocalyptic language that they would use, the Whore of Babylon. So here you have a rejection of an entire religious stream. You have a portrayal of ecumenicalism and interreligious dialogue as being demonic. You also have a portrayal of a situation in which the Jews are either converted or killed.
The Jewish people in Israel have a central place in the vision of apocalypse and the second coming of Jesus as it's described in the Left Behind series and as it's understood by the authors of this series. Let me ask you to explain that place.
Well, here these books really provide a key to understanding support by the Christian right for Israel and what's underlying it, and how, strangely enough, there's really a very anti-Jewish theology underlying the ostensible support for Israel. Because in the theology that they're presenting, the Jews have to return to their land and create a state as the prelude for the second coming. But once the apocalyptic events begin to take place, the Jews will either have to convert or to die. When the scenario is completed, when the second coming takes place, there will be no more Jews.
Let me explain. That means that in order for them to get to heaven, they have to convert to born-again Christianity. And if not, they'll be condemned to hell. At least that's how it was described a little earlier on our show by Tim LaHaye.
Right. But if you read the books, you see something further than that. Because, again, the books are a playing out of the religious drama in the real world. So by the latest of the books, by number 10, you have a scene in which the Antichrist is ordering the slaughter of all Jews. And the only ones who are going to get saved, clearly from what else is going on in the book, are those who have already become Christians. So the scene that readers are reading is one in which Jews either convert or die. That's the fantasy in the books. There won't be any more Jews to refuse Jesus. In a sense, what you have going on here, again, is this is the resolution of all the forms of dissonance that that the fundamentalist feels about this world. And one of the prime places of dissonance is how come the Jews didn't accept the person that Christianity regards as the Messiah? After all, he was a Jew. Christianity insists that he was the Jewish Messiah. How come the Jews don't accept him? Christianity says that he was predicted in the Hebrew Scriptures. How come the Jews who have that book don't accept that? So what happens in this series of novels? They either accept it or they die. The irony is that here you have a group of people who are emphatically professing their love for Israel and for the Jewish people, and yet they're basing that on a variation of a theology which is incredibly intolerant to Judaism.
Some leaders on the Christian right, including Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, have offered support for Israel. And I'm wondering if that's controversial in Israel, since part of the Christian right believes the scenario that we've been discussing, that Israel is important because it hearkens the second coming of Jesus. But on the other hand, Jews will have to convert if they want to get to heaven.
It's created growing controversy, particularly in recent days. There's been questions about groups accepting funds from fundraisers who target American fundamentalists. There's been questions about the political program that the American Christian right would like to promote in Israel, because its support for Israel is really the support for a very hardline far right-wing position.
What is that position?
Well, they regularly push the idea that Israel should not give up any land in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, but continue ruling those territories forever. They say that this is land that's promised by God to the Jews, and therefore immediate pragmatic and moral problems involved in ruling a Palestinian population are irrelevant. There have been some members of the Christian right who have even proposed evicting the Palestinians from the territories. Those are positions that are on the very far right-wing fringe in Israeli terms.
When the Christian right supports Israel with funding, who does the money go to?
There's been a range of programs that they've supported. There have been some people who simply raised large sums of money for humanitarian projects, or they're particularly interested in projects to settle new immigrants here because they see that, the ingathering of the Jews to their land, as fulfilling prophecy. But we've also seen the phenomenon of Christian right leaders and groups lending moral and financial support to groups on the radical right-wing fringe in Israel. Most specifically, groups that would like to destroy the Muslim shrines at the Temple Mount at Haram HaSharif and replace them with the Third Temple, because Christian fundamentalists see that as essential for the Second Coming. So, for instance, the leader of the Temple Mount Faithful, one such radical group, regularly goes to the United States and goes from fundamentalist church to fundamentalist church raising money for his group, which actually has very little support within Israel. And I've even heard and read statements by figures on the Christian right who proclaim their love for Israel and at the same time express understanding or even sympathy for the assassination of the late Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. This is the equivalent of somebody telling you that he supports the United States and that's why he loves Timothy McVeigh. I think most Americans would feel rather uncomfortable with somebody expressing that kind of supposed support for the United States.
My guest is Israeli journalist Gershom Gorenberg. He's the author of the book The End of Days, Fundamentalism and the Struggle for the Temple Mount. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, one of the things we're talking about is the best-selling series of books called the Left Behind series, and its co-author is Tim LaHaye, who joined us earlier on this program. And he is somebody who believes that the Second Coming is near, and this series of books expresses the events, a fictionalized version of the events that might happen before the Second Coming. Now, some of the scenario is based on the Book of Revelations. How much of this scenario is based on the Bible, and how much of it is based on something more recent than that?
They claim that this is all based on a literal reading of the Bible, and that they're not putting any of their own interpretation into it. And of course, this claim is rather absurd, because any construction of an understanding of the Bible involves human interpretation. You're talking about an ancient text, one that's poetic, one that's ambiguous, one that's often allegorical. So when they construct this entire scenario out of the Bible, it's a vast structure of interpretation in which key girders in that structure are biblical verses. But the way that those verses are put together, the way that the structure is built, is the responsibility of the people creating the structure. In fact, that's one of the great moral problems, is that they don't take responsibility for the philosophy that they're promoting.
You also, in your book, The End of Days, cite somebody named John Darby for first expressing this type of rapture scenario.
Right. Darby was a 19th century British preacher who came up with a new theory of the end of days, and his ideas spread very quickly among conservative Protestants in the United States, and eventually became the main theology among American fundamentalists, and quite influential among the wider community known as evangelicals. It's not universally accepted. The fact that somebody is an evangelical doesn't mean that he or she accepts these ideas, but they are very, very, very influential. The thing that's interesting is that you'll find that the various prophecy preachers and scholars with their books and their videos and their cassette tapes and their radio shows rarely mention Darby, because the conceit is this is the literal meaning of the text. So you shouldn't refer back to a earlier interpreter. That would be admitting that this is an interpretation.
How did you learn about Darby?
Well, I first began to look into these groups because I became interested in their connections with far-right groups in Israel. And in the course of reading about them, talking to scholars who had, Christian theology who had studied these groups, I was pointed to various texts which explained the history of this movement. But as I said, when you read the popular text, there is almost never any mention of where these ideas started, where they came from, because they're supposed to be the literal meaning of the Bible. One thing that's very funny about it, actually, is that oftentimes these literal interpretations are being offered by people who actually can't read the original text. They're literal interpretations of a translation. And, of course, every translation is in itself an interpretation. So they're taking the English text of the Bible and building these theories upon it.
Is there a scene from the Left Behind series that that you could describe to illustrate what you consider to be one of the more disturbing aspects of this worldview?
Well, in the 10th book of the series, which is the most recent one, which is called The Remnant, there is a scene in which the character known as Nikolai Carpathia, who is the Antichrist, the world dictator, is sitting in his office, and he calls in his top aide, and he tells him to go out and order the death of all the Jews. He says, imprison them, torture them, humiliate them, shame them, blaspheme their God, plunder everything they own. Nothing is more important. And the aide rushes out to do this. Now, this idea, which is basically the idea of a coming Holocaust, is one that you find often in the writings of fundamentalist Christians. There's books that you can find on their websites with names like Israel's Final Holocaust. I've had other fundamentalist figures tell me that what will happen during the last years of history will be worse than what happened in Europe in the 40s. And when you question them on this, they say, well, we don't want it to happen, but that's what the Bible says will happen. But of course, this isn't their interpretation of the Bible. The Bible doesn't say this. This is how they read the Bible.
Now, you cover the intersection of religion and politics in Israel. And in Israel, you have people from the three monotheistic faiths coming because the Middle East is a center for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish belief. So do you feel that Israel is a kind of flashpoint for apocalyptic thinking in all three monotheistic faiths?
Absolutely. The difficulty that Israel lives with is that because it's the Holy Land, it's also the stage upon which the apocalyptic myths of all three religions say that the final drama is going to be played out. And that creates a situation in which anything that happens here, particularly anything dramatic, can easily be interpreted as being part of the end. And so there are people in Israel among the Jews who see the creation of Israel and the victory of 1967 as proof that the Messiah is coming. There are Muslims who are also certain, for different reasons, that the events of today are proof that the last days are upon us as described in Islam. And one of the things that's not much known here, but is very important, is that in Islam as well, the last events are supposed to take place in Jerusalem. As one fundamentalist sheikh said to me, Islam was born in Mecca, but it will reach its conclusion in Jerusalem. So for Muslims as well, the real-life political conflict in the Holy Land can easily take on mythical proportions of the end.
Do you think apocalyptic thinking is figuring at all into the actual peace process or the totally derailed peace process in the Middle East now?
These kind of beliefs have played a crucial role in the Middle East conflict for the last century and certainly in the last several years. And one of the failures of secular politicians and diplomats was not knowing enough about these beliefs in order to be able to deal with them better.
Give me an example of what you mean.
Well, first of all, the existence of small radical fringe groups in the Israeli public who would like to destroy the Islamic shrines in Jerusalem and replace them with the temple has reverberated far louder in the Muslim world, to the extent that many, many Arabs are convinced that that's what Israel as a government is intending to do. So at the Camp David talks, when the subject of who would have final sovereignty over the Temple Mount came up, and Prime Minister Ehud Barak suggested that it would remain under Israeli sovereignty and that there would be a place there for Jewish worship as well, as one Palestinian pollster told me afterwards, that sounded on the Palestinian side as if, it's true, the Jews really want to get rid of the shrines and build the temple there. That wasn't at all what Barak intended, but it was an entirely predictable response if you know what the religious mood was. On top of that, there was a vast literature of popular Islamic pamphlets predicting that the last days would begin in the year 2000, according to the Christian calendar, and that it would begin with a Jewish attempt to destroy Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. So the political events, as it were, backed up this kind of religious paranoia and heated up the temperature greatly.
Well, Gershom Gorenberg, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Gershom Gorenberg is the author of The End of Days, Fundamentalism and the Struggle for the Temple Mount. This is Fresh Air.